Now, as you know, we've discussed active travel plans for Letterkenny for quite some time now, and I think we have heard certainly from businesses up the Glencoe Road particularly. We've heard from a lot of residents who believe they're just not the right plans at this time. And we're going to get another sense of what the business community think through Giles McGee, owner of Charlie's Caff in Letterkenny. Thank you so much for joining me this morning, Giles.
Morning, Greg. Morning to all your listeners.
Right, and your warning is a stark one in relation to the impact of the active travel plans around Letterkenny. So I'll just hand it over to you. What's your assessment of it all?
My assessment, Greg, of the active travel plans, people may tend to think that I have a negative attitude towards this plan. I don't. I have a very negative attitude towards it in the relationship to the lack of proper traffic management in Letterkenny. Letterkenny on a daily basis suffers terribly with the influx of traffic into and out of the town and through the town on their way towards other parts of the country and other parts of the county. And the narrowing of these major routes into the road, into town and through the other side of town to accommodate foot traffic and cycle lanes is only going to prove to be a nail in the coffin to an awful lot of businesses in Letterkenny, Greg, because if customers can't make their way into Letterkenny comfortably or travel through Letterkenny comfortably, there's only going to be one outcome, and that, as far as I can see, is going to be business closure.
Like, your business is directly affected by worsening traffic, because it would be lovely to think that half of the cars would be people walking then, or cycling or scooting. But we know that's probably not likely to be the case. People like to use their cars. So say, for instance, when the town's really busy like it was at the weekend, lots of people are around, the default opinion from someone outside of business would have been that you must have been rushed off your feet, Giles.
No, the opposite. We had the complete opposite effect, Greg. The fact that the town was very, very busy, and I must commend the Gardaí, who did a fantastic job over the weekend, by the way. The effect is that when your customer can't get comfortably to your business premises and get back out again in a reasonable time frame, then they're not going to travel into town. And, you know, they talk about an active travel plan where the council seem to want people to jump onto their bikes or get onto the footpaths and walk all around Letterkenny. Well, that's really a non-starter, because Letterkenny is very spread out. And, I mean, if you're living under a Melton Road, you're not going to walk into Letterkenny. You're not going to use the cycle paths into Letterkenny to bring yourself into town and go back out again. It's very hilly. It's not like Galway and maybe Sligo or other towns like that, where it's, you know, a lot more condensed. Like, Letterkenny has massive offering for the wider northwest region. And we do, as business people, we do a fantastic job of providing basically everything that the people of Letterkenny and Donegal and the wider community need. But again, when you've got thousands and thousands of cars that have to go through Letterkenny to go on their way either to Derry or Sligo or Dublin, I mean, you know, in lieu of a business plan for, like, I suppose I'm trying to say, Greg, we need a bridge over Letterkenny. We need the traffic that diverted that goes through Letterkenny away from the town, so that then will have a knock-on effect where the traffic that really has to go into town can get into town, can get back out. Mm. You'll have a traffic jam now on a Tuesday morning for no reason other than the town just can't take any more cars.
Your business is...
Reason. Sorry, Greg.
No. I'm sorry, Giles, I didn't mean... What I was going to ask you is, you know, the business has been there for 41 years, which is a remarkable achievement, but that's off the back of it being run well and quality food. You've been in charge there for 14 years. In terms of threats to the business, you know, COVID, recessions and all that, where does these active travel plans stand in terms of a threat when you compare it to everything else? Do the businesses survive? It's going well at the moment, of course. You're sort of preempting where things might be.
My thoughts and my feelings on where my own business is going to end up is probably very negative. And I don't want to use the words that I used to other people, particularly not on live on radio, but it'll be detrimental, Greg. Like Donegal County Council and all of our councillors made took a vote to vote in this active travel plan, which could be fantastic for Letterkenny. But it can only be fantastic for Letterkenny if the traffic that doesn't need to be in town can be removed. This is very much a cart before the horse situation. And the council are only spending money on this active travel plan specifically because the money's there. They've been granted money for it. You can watch the video online that was taken in the council chamber where they're talking about we have to spend this money and get people out of their cars. That's not going to happen in Letterkenny. I would like to see some of the other towns that have had this active travel plan thrust upon them to see how well their business is coping with it. I think Donegal County Council should be shown a degree of bravery when, you know, they turn this plan down and say, look, Letterkenny is not capable of handling this plan right now. And if you take them out on the road on any Friday or Saturday or any bank holiday Monday, you're going to be sitting there for hours. So consider this now. You're coming from Downings or Elton on a bank holiday Monday, and you're going from two lanes down into one lane across the front of the Mondego to allow for active travel. I don't see where all of these people are going to be travelling on their bicycles or on footpaths and how it's going to have a positive impact on the town. It can't have a positive impact on an already overtoked town. So,
we can't at the moment, and I'm really reflecting what people have said to me, but we can't get scooters off the footpath onto the road at the moment. Like, that's beyond us at the moment. There's scooters going around every single footpath in the town, up and down the main street on the wrong side in some instances. So we can't even get this the relatively small amount of people now to conform with the laws that are there. Like, this idea that people are going to push cycle up past the hospital, up Glencar, up that massive hill or anywhere else is... Like, it feels a little bit fanciful. Who are these people that are going to hop on their scooters and their bikes and their feet to go and get fish and chips in Charlie's and then, head out the remote and road to eat them? I mean, like, I can't... I, like, I'm trying to be objective, but I'm trying to find out also who these people are. Where are they?
I don't know who they are, Greg. I don't know. I mean, I live just outside the town on out in Manor, and I use the four lane every day coming in and every day going out home. No cyclists are using the so-called cycle lanes.
I've seen less than five, and I'm just being completely honest. I can only go with the evidence of my eyeballs. And
100%. I would like to see where. You know, where the decision was made by Donegal County Council, whereby they thought this was actually a really good idea and this was going to promote Letterkenny as a town to walk around or cycle around. That's not going to happen, Greg. Unfortunately for Letterkenny, it was built, you know, we're built in a hollow. We've got hills all around. It's not an area where, you know, the ordinary person is, as you've said, going to cycle down the Remelton Road or going to cycle down from Highland Radio to get a fish and chips in Charlie's and then cycle back up again. It just doesn't happen. But, I mean, what could happen is, you know, unfortunately for us, we have to use cars around here. But like I've said already, if the traffic that does not need to be in Letterkenny, i.e. the traffic that's coming from Fannad or from Remelton or any of those places that has to go to Derry or any of those other places outside that have to go through Letterkenny. If they didn't have to go through Letterkenny, then it would free up the town for everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, cart before the horse is a phrase that's used often. Was it a rush of blood to the head when you said the councillors that voted in favour of the active travel plan might not be as welcome as others into your business? Do you stand by that? Or?
I do stand by it, Greg. It's one of those things whereby I think too many things in Letterkenny have been thrust upon the people that live and work in Letterkenny by council, by government. I mean, the whole flavour of the shows this morning has been how Donegal as a whole is so completely disadvantaged. Letterkenny completely is totally disadvantaged. I mean, they've been talking about a bridge over the River Swilly for probably 25 years.
Yeah, but in certain cases, we often blame Dublin, Giles. In this case, where Donegal's arguably shooting Letterkenny in the foot. You know, can we blame Dublin for this one? No, we can't. This is an internal decision.
We can't, Greg. This is an internal decision. This was a decision made by Donegal County Council to actually apply to government for funding for this active travel plan. So, I mean, Donegal County Council are actively doing their damnedest to shut this town down.
Okay. Have you any feelings on people from outside the Letterkenny voting on this? Obviously, this got over the line because local councillors were able to sort of get their party colleagues behind them where applicable. Do you have any issue with the fact that the majority of people who made this decision aren't actually living and working in Letterkenny?
I think the councillors that took the vote on this, for want of a better way of putting it, Greg, I think particularly those that are outside of the town, I think the council as a whole want to be able to pat themselves on the back and say, this is a great thing. Look what we've provided now for Letterkenny. Excuse me. We've widened roads. We've got nice new footpaths. We've got lovely cycle lanes and so on and so forth. But what they're actually doing is they're not coming into Letterkenny and sitting down with me here in Charlie's and watching the traffic that's stuck, that can't go anywhere on a Tuesday morning for no reason other than there's too much traffic here. I think if they were living and working in Letterkenny, you'll see the thousands of cars that come down past Ten Radio every morning on their way to work. You could be stuck in traffic for an hour. That's every approach road into and out of Letterkenny. And the majority of the vote that was made, and Sean or Greg, you'll have these numbers, it was a 20 councillors voted in favour and 13 voted against. You've had, and I'm not party politically affiliated, but you've had Kieran Brogan on discussing the fact that they tried to turn this around and have the active travel plan stopped for the time being until an alternative can be arranged. That there was another vote taken, and that vote was put through again, and also again predominantly by councillors from outside of Letterkenny that don't live and work in Letterkenny, that don't understand the difficulties we face on a daily basis when we're trying to promote Letterkenny, we're trying to sell our wares, we're trying to keep people in jobs. You know, I don't see how many of our councillors are directly responsible for 10 or 12 or 15 people's wages on a Friday evening. You know, I employ 10 people here, and Charlie's is 41 years old this year, started in 1984 by my parents. And we've been here for a long, long time. We're probably one of the longest serving businesses on the Pierce Road. And, you know, all the different measures that have been taking place, some of them for the good, some of them for the better. This one in particular is going to be for the worst. And the fact that it was taken by a majority of councillors from outside of Letterkenny, I just think it's absolutely deplorable.
Okay. Listen, thanks for that, Giles. Hopefully things continue to be as successful as they are right now. But, you know, we talk about headwinds. We don't need to be sort of purposely steering the boat into the headwinds at times, but sometimes it can feel like that. Giles, thank you. That is Giles McGee, owner of Charlie's Cafe in Letterkenny. George, you're a resident, I think, out there in Melton Road. So, you know, for someone who's right in the outskirts of town, do you think twice about coming into town, or what's your life like out on the Remelton Road?
That's fine. I don't mind that. You live with that. But I just want to congratulate Mr. McGee there, young McGee, because he's correct in everything he said, but everything he said is 100%. Now, if you go out, they're trying now to talk about this new road going from Tommy Key's garage across to Bunnegee. That's a waste of time, because if you go out there, drive out to the Tassie on a busy, busy weekend, and now it's got actually worse, most of the cars are either English or Northern Ireland. They don't want to come in as far as Tommy Key's garage to turn off. They want to turn off around the Tassie area and head over then onto the main Derry Letterkenny Road, and then they can choose then either go to Derry or Belfast or wherever. But bringing them into as far as Tommy Key's, it's going to make no difference. It's not going to help the situation. Definitely not.
Yeah, so, you see, that's it. We have this situation. We've got more traffic. We've got more traffic that doesn't want to go to Letterkenny, which is stopping the traffic that does want to go to Letterkenny going into it, which is an ironic situation.
Yeah, and they're thinking about a bridge from Tommy Keys across to Bunnegee, and that'll relieve and get the traffic doesn't want to come on to Letterkenny out. That's too close. It's coming in too close. It needs to be way out. Out around the suburb Tassie area, crossing over there. That leaves then all the people that don't want to come to Letterkenny, they can go freely away from there. And likewise, coming in and going to Downers and these other areas, they don't have to come into Letterkenny, so that frees up your port road a bit. Now, I'm out here like over 40 years, and I always noticed that bank holiday Mondays and Sunday evenings in the summertime are always very busy. But now it's every weekend and every night virtually. You know, it doesn't matter if it's bank holiday now or not. The traffic's backed past where I live, like right out to the golf links. And it's just unreal. And that bridge isn't going to help. So he's got right. He's perfectly right, like what he's talking about.
George,
and the bikes, like that. Yeah. I'm all for biking, but there's too many hills. Too many ups and downs, like, you know.
See, that's the we're not. You see, the reason like Holland has such a high population of people cycling, it's as flat as a pancake. Yeah. All right, George. Thanks for that. Take care of yourself. Lovely to chat to you. Now, the Department of Education has proposed a circular, a policy change effectively, that could significantly reduce access to special schools for children with mild to moderate general learning disabilities. The circular favours placement in mainstream schools with special classes, even when those settings are not appropriate. That's one view of what is being proposed. We have a number of guests to discuss this, two in studio. But first, I want to go to Sinead McGurk, who has a very strong interest in this, of course. Sinead, thank you so much for your time. I do appreciate it.
Hi, Greg.
Right, now, you're calling on people to protect our children's right to special school education. Say no to Circular 0039-2025. So, as far as you see, what is proposed and how might this impact you and other parents and children, of course?
Okay, the circular itself is basically, as you've said, removing a lot of children from special needs schools and putting them into specialist classes within mainstream. I am most definitely a parent and advocate for the inclusion of education. I have two children with special needs. One goes to a mainstream school with an autism class, and I have another child that goes to a special school. Both have autism and both have learning disabilities. My decision was taken into consideration on which school they should go to. There's a massive fight to get your child into a special class or a special needs school. You first of all have to go through the formal diagnosis process. You need to get a professional recommendation from the psychologist saying what school they should go to and what needs they have and how they should be met. And now the circular is bringing in an additional part of bureaucracy and asking us to then obtain from National Council of Special Education Needs a letter saying that they meet the eligibility criteria and that they're allowed a place in the class or the school. So this is one point that massively impacts upon every single family with a child with any sort of learning disability or some additional need. At present, the backlog in Letterkenny, it's taking about 18 to 30 months plus for any child that has been flagged up as having some sort of additional need to be assessed and processed. So you're talking about 2 years before any child that has started to show any signs, before they will firstly get to see a psychologist, get a diagnosis, and then start this process of going through the bureaucratic system of then meeting the tick box exercise of the National Council for Special Education Needs to say, yes, you should have a place in a specialist school, or yes, you should have it in a special class within the mainstream school. Now, this is a tick box exercise, so these children have to fit into specific boxes. Need to have a learning disability, or need to have autism, or so these little classified boxes that they need to fit into. If you're outside of those boxes, and many of our children have complex needs, then they will automatically be referred into the mainstream school, and they have no way of having necessary supports and services available to them to make that a viable option and to meet their educational needs. There is also forced placement. So they're going to, if your child fits into this little box, your child will be forced into the special class or the special needs school or into mainstream school. This removes, because it's a tick box exercise by the NSCE, the National Curriculum for Special Education, Council for Special Education, they will dictate where the child will go. at present, a parent has the right with the Epsom Act. We have the right to have a say and decide which school we want our child to go to and which is the best to suit their needs with the assistance of the professionals. This tick box exercise will now state that doesn't matter what the professionals say, doesn't matter what it says on the paper that you have stating what your child's needs are from the school, from the educators that teach them at present, from any other services they have. It has to be the National Council for Special Education needs to have to give this approval.
And you're so of the view, as many are, that rather than going down this route, the Department of Education should in fact be, you know, making sure to preserve the special schools that are there for children with MGLD, but actually expand them as well, expand access, because it seems that part of this plan is because the Department of Education do anticipate an increase in numbers of children requiring these types of services, and that seems to be one of the main driving factors. They frame it as inclusion, but it's actually just to accommodate them somewhere. In other words, there'll be a place for everyone, but it's not the right place for everyone necessarily.
Okay. This is a rushed bureaucratic shortcut that prioritises the appearance that they're progressing to get people places, but actually cuts out the children with complex profiles and basically does nothing for their needs. So if you have autism, brilliant, you've got a place. If you've got Maya's learning disability, great, this is where you're going. But what about everybody that falls through those cracks? People with behavioural issues, children that have oppositional defiance disorder. I mean, there's so many different children that go to our specialist schools that our special schools have so much experience, a wealth of knowledge. They have on-tap experts that they can tap into to help our children to be able to allow them to have an education, not just tailored to the curriculum, but either narrow down into specialist curriculum form, or if it suits better, down to a social, practical life experience for them so that they will be able to live a future. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to reduce our special needs schools and send them out into localised areas just for inclusion. Mm-hmm. This is going to cause exclusion. A child like my son going into a mainstream school with an autism class, my son wasn't one of those, but he had to go into a specialist school, and that was because the school was not able to meet his needs. He was being socially excluded because he wasn't being able to participate in the classes. So he's being left in the autism class. He wasn't able to interact with his peers properly. So therefore, he's been excluded by his peers. He was having a terrible, basically his inclusion was excluding him from normal school life. Now in a special needs school where he is up in St Bernadette's, my child has had an amazing life interacting with children with all different disabilities, all different challenges and complex needs, that he has been able to experience life rather than just being stuck in a mainstream school and overwhelmed. He's been put into a school where there's comfort care and he can see real life experiences of other people and other peers.
All right, stay where you are, Gillian. Sorry, I beg your pardon. Stay where you are, Sinead. Gillian McCrabb is chair of the Parents Association of St Bernadette's Special School, Letterkenny. And I also have with me John Harron, principal of St Bernard's Special School in Letterkenny. I'll start with you, Gillian. You are also you're on the Parents Association, obviously, because you have a child also attending St Bernadette's. You know, on the face of it, and maybe for those who aren't directly affected by this, inclusion sounds good, doesn't it? Everyone's treated the same, everyone gets equal opportunity. But I mean, obviously very quickly, and we heard very clearly there from Sinead, you know, you can see the holes in that argument very, very quickly. What's your attitude to this?
Inclusion, to me, in theory, it sounds fantastic, but in practice, it isn't, it doesn't work. Maddie was diagnosed at 3 and we were told that she had a rare genetic syndrome and that she wouldn't learn, she wouldn't read and she wouldn't write. So we automatically assumed she would go to a special needs school. When we went, we actually went and visited all the special needs schools we could. When she had her clinical assessment, they deemed her to have a mild learning difficulty, so she was therefore sent to a mainstream school. Now, in the mainstream school, I cannot fault them. They tried. But Maddie, there was just something that didn't work. Maddie cried every day going to school. She cried every day coming home from school. She wasn't excelling. She wasn't happy. And when we originally enrolled her, I actually spoke to the principal of the school and told him that Maddie would stay in mainstream as long as she was thriving. When she had to cope, we would leave. Now, they did tell us when Maddie was diagnosed that she wouldn't be academic. She wouldn't read, she wouldn't write. She's now in St. Bernadette's 2.5 years and she's reading on par with her peers. She's writing on par with her peers. She is happy. She gets up every morning. She gets dressed. She goes to school. She now complains when she doesn't have school because she's in where she should be. And that's, as much as I would love active inclusion, I would have loved her to stay at the school where her brothers and sisters went. It just wasn't right. And it's not right for every student to remain in mainstream.
No, and you can see it in action. This is evidence based. You've seen how Maddie did in a mainstream school, a good mainstream school with as much as can be done for her,
yeah,
versus how she has come on and caught up with her peers in St. Bernadette. So, you know, you have the evidence that, yeah, you don't have to see what it might be like if she now goes into a mainstream school.
No,
You've seen this. And I would imagine a lot of parents, perhaps their story is similar to yours. They've seen the mainstream situation and then they've seen what changes in a special school.
Yeah. Well, we have 39 members of the Parents Association, and of that 39, 37 of those students that are there had been mainstreamed before they went to St. Bernadette's. And of those 37 people that have tried mainstream, they will not blame mainstream. They're not saying it's not the school's fault, but sometimes our kids just need that little bit extra, and that little bit extra is what they get when they're in St. Bernadette's. We leveled the playing field for them. Mm.
Is there no scenario with investment, better resources, that the mainstream model can work for... Like, in other words, is there no middle ground here? Is that if the government, the Department of Education, actually got this right, maybe you could have the benefits of a special school from an educational purpose, and then maybe have the benefits of a mainstream school for the inclusion element of it, as an example?
From what I saw with Maddie, the inclusion was fine when she was younger, but as she grew, the isolation from her peers became different. You know, sports days, she wasn't able to keep up. So people didn't want her on the team, you know, that type of way.
Mm-hmm.
That social gap got bigger and bigger as she grew. The educational gap got bigger and bigger as she grew. She was being removed from the classroom for her education. Whereas in St. Bernadette's, she's educated in her classroom with her friends.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose too, you know, what happens between 6 and 10 or 8 and 14...
It's very different.
But then it affects you 18 plus, doesn't it really? Because when she leaves school, the more equal she is to people of her age, the better her prospects are for life. And
the more confident
well.
She is
yeah,
in
exactly,
herself.
Exactly. You've said it perfectly there. John Harran is the principal of St. Bernadette's Special School in Letterkenny. I mean, you know, John, yous are the people, you know, be it Gillian or Sinead, and be it you as the head of Bernadette's Special School. Who knows more than you guys? What's your take on this circular?
Thanks, Greg, for having us in today. We're very worried, Greg. You know, the staff are very worried, the Board of Management are very worried, and the parents are very worried, and probably our pupils are very worried too about the future. There's a lot of uncertainty. This circular, people can read it if they want. It's 15 pages long. If you want to read a Department of Education circular, it's 39.25. But there's a small piece, Greg, on page 13, which, you know, I've been liaising with other special school principals now since I've been principal for 5 years, but a lot of them have been principals for 10, 15 years, and they've been waiting on this. It's been going in the background a long time about the redesignation of special schools, and specifically, Greg, the redesignation of mild special schools. Mm-hmm. So St. Bernard's is a school for children with a mild general learning disability. There's 131 special schools in the country, Greg. There's 30 mild schools. So we're very, very niche in what we do. We take children with an IQ score between 50 and 69. So when the child is in school, like Maddie, in a mainstream school, and the gap begins to widen, The parents are called in for a meeting with the teachers. You know, next thing, an educational psychologist carries out and a full assessment on the child. And you know, it comes down to scores, Greg, unfortunately. But if the child scores between 50 and 69, there means they have a mild general learning disability. And in many ways, Greg, there's nothing mild about it, but that's the name that's on it. So those children can come to St. Bernadette's. That's the children we cater for. The school is over 40 years old.
My concern with this, and maybe this will feed into what you're about to say, John, is the Department of Education has seen to come with a plan, but they haven't actually figured out how that plan works. So they want more children from special schools in mainstream schools, but they're still working on the transition, how that would work, who would qualify. Yeah. It seems to be so that they can say everyone has a place in September or something along those lines.
Something along those lines, Greg. And maybe you know, this is a more of an acute problem down the country where we see where children don't have places, and we've seen it in Donegal recently. Where the department is under pressure, but what they're trying to do here is move our children out from a school where they're thriving, move them into mainstream, which opens up places for children with complex needs. This is what they're talking about, a catch-all special school, and a catch-all special school in the department's eyes is pushing the mild children out and then bringing in children with complex needs, and we don't know what children with complex needs are. You know, there's a spectrum, Greg, of needs out there, but there also is a spectrum of provision, you know, and the children like Gillian's daughter and Sinead's son, you know, they're in the mild range. They're in their spectrum of needs, and we cater for them, and we cater for them so well. Like, Greg, in the last 7 or 8 years, St. Bernadette's has probably doubled in size. Next September, we're going to have 125 students from all over Donegal. So, you know, what we are doing, we're doing well, and the parents can see that, and they're sending their children to us in droves, and we're delighted with that because it's great. You know, it's great for the school. It's great that we must be doing something right.
How many of those, is it easy to quantify how many of your students originated in the mainstream school system?
I would say 95%, Greg.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So what that demonstrates is that these children weren't doing as well as they could in the mainstream setup, which they're trying to move us towards, and have thrived in St. Bernadette's, yeah. And we're looking to undo that effectively.
They're looking to undo that, Greg. You know, it's really, really worrying. They're looking to undo that. They're looking to move our children out. So the children that are in the school at the moment will be okay. They won't have to leave. But in fairness to Gillian and Sinead and the other parents that are, you know, they're worried about the children that are out there that could come to St. Bernard's and won't be given that opportunity because the NCSE and the Department of Education don't want them, won't give them that chance. We'll say you can go to mainstream school, and that frees up places for children with complex needs, and we don't know what that is.
All right, stay there. I do have to take a break, but I don't want to end on this. Gillian, just before I let you go, any last word?
No, just...
Sorry, not Gillian. You're staying there. Sorry, Gillian. Sinead McGurk, I beg your pardon, Gillian. I've got to hear more from you. But Gillian, you've been listening there to Sinead and John. Just last word for this segment from you.
We're just really worried, Greg, and we hope that, you know, the local politicians, I know Gillian and the Parents Association, we've emailed them all, and in fairness, a lot of them have got back to us, but, you know, they really need to stand up and fight for us.
I'm sorry, John, I'm all over the place. Sinead, sorry, it's you I wanted the last word from. I beg your pardon. Sinead? Yeah.
Basically, for me, one of the massive things is that the government and departments are trying to remove the soft barrier that is in place for the likes of the children who need that additional assistance but don't qualify as, you know, a specific condition that's on this list that they're going to approve them to attend a special school or to have the extra support and services that are attached to a special needs school. And the removal of this barrier removes other professionals, psychologists, school professionals, occupational therapists, speech therapists, everybody has access with our children. It removes their professional experience from saying, look, your child is best situated in a special needs school. They don't meet the criteria, but look, here is a process that we can, you know, apply to the likes of St. Bernadette's and get them in. This is going to stop that. So no longer will those children that have complex needs to do
much. All right, the line's gone a little bit on us. Sinead, listen, thank you very much for making your points as clearly as you did. Patrick has a son who attends St. Bernadette's Special School. Good morning, Patrick. Thanks for joining the conversation.
Good morning, Sean. Thanks for having me. Greg,
it's okay. Don't worry about that, Patrick. Okay, so what's your family situation and why does this news trouble you?
My family situation is, like you said, I have a son that attends the school. A wee bit of background on him. He originally started a mainstream primary school in Letterkenny. I'll not say the name of it, you know, but when he started at a normal age, you know, but we didn't really notice any issues with him at the start because it was such a young age. But as he progressed and got older, it started to become a bit more evident that he was having learning difficulties. So the school assigned him with an SMA. He didn't really improve very much, to be honest, what the SMA helped either. So they told us that he would have to switch schools altogether because they couldn't read his educational needs. So we done that. But before we done it, we tried to get him as much help as we possibly could, doing other wee classes like helping him with his maths and English and different things, but really none of that was working, and we had to change schools to another school in Letterkenny that had what was it called? A speech and language unit. Now this other school also has an autism unit as well within it, but my son went to the speech and language unit. Now when he changed schools, all his friends that he made in his previous schools, he lost bar one, and he kind of kept in contact with that particular student as well, you know. Now, when he went to the new school, he obviously made more friends there, but the criteria for it is you can only stay a maximum of 2 years within that speech and language unit. And then when that finished, he was back in the mainstream again within the same school. So all the friends he made over the course of the 2 years within the speech and language unit, he lost. So then he went to the other school, his next mainstream class, made friends there, and ended up losing them too as well when they had to change again.
And tough now, little things time, too, where he's spotting that he's the only one with an SNA in a certain school, and then there was this situation where he was on different books to the rest of his classmates. It's really, really tough to because young ones think, they think a lot, and they often think when they're in bed, and it's a tough old thing for him to be dealing with in his young wee mind, you know, and at the same time trying to do the best for himself and please his parents. It's a lot on him.
As he was under a lot of pressure, being honest, like, you know, at that age, he doesn't have, you know, the intellectual ability that an adult would have to be able to express himself the way he would like, and the way he would put his points across, you know, would be different, and it can be very confusing. But as he was getting older, when he was sitting in mainstream class, his books were covered. He was fourth class, and his books were covered because he was doing the equivalent of what students in second class would be doing.
It makes me very
sad. He was
sad,
both in the SNA every day.
Can I ask Patrick, and, just because we've a lot to get through just before the end of the show, and I don't mean in any way disrespectful, I just want to know how his life changed then when you managed to get him into St. Bernadette's, and how the whole family's life changed, I suppose.
The whole situation, when he moved to St. Bernadette's, it was like a light switch, like pressing the button and turning it on. His life and our life as parents completely changed overnight. He went to school a lot more happier, and he always referred to St. Bernadette's as the easy school because he was never under any pressure. He was in with students that were at the same learning ability as he was. He didn't feel any different. He didn't feel that he had to prove himself to people. He was on a level playing field, and every day he went to school, he loved it, and he came back happy every day, telling us how much he enjoyed school and how good the teachers and all the SNAs were up there. And as a parent, all you want is your kid to be happy, and that school certainly done that for
Patrick. Thank you so much for letting us know your situation. John Harn, principal of Bernadette Special, St. Bernadette Special School. You know, sometimes we sort of get on a cause, and maybe if it's one individual school and spaces within that school, and you can put pressure on the Department of Education and the Minister for Education, and you can get some success in that regard. This is sort of like a massive policy here, and it's going to be a tough nut to crack. So obviously, yous are doing fantastic work in advocating. Where are the unions on this? You know, opposition politicians, it's going to require that level of involvement, I think, for this to be reviewed, if you know what I mean, because it seems that the Department of Education are very stuck into this.
Oh, they are, Greg, absolutely. And, you know, there has been questions asked in the draw in this last couple of weeks, and, you know, a lot of the principals around the country and the parents' associations are rolling behind it because we feel very strongly about it. But it is going to take a big push to try and get it stalled for the time being, Greg. I think they need to stall it and need to review it because they haven't thought it through. Like, it's a 15-page document and we're only a small part of it. And it's all, you know, the title of the circular, Greg, is, you know, Forward Planning for Special Education Provision in Ireland, which is great, and that's what we want. You know, when they talk about putting special classes onto mainstream schools and all this, which is great, surely, but this, you know, they've been at this for a good while for special schools to try and get us to redesignate. They've spoken about some of schools like St. Bernard's who have redesignated over the last few years, but from talking to them parents, they've been, or from talking to those principals, they've been put under severe pressure by the NCSE and the Department of Education. Like, you'll get a new school if you redesignate, you know, you'll get new classes if you redesignate. So they put awful pressure. They put pressure on St. Bernadette's 2 years ago, and our board of management stood firm and says, no, we weren't going to redesignate. We're a school for children with a mild general learning disability. We're going to stay that way. What we do well, and we stuck to our guns. And we're flying, but unfortunately, we're under severe.
But what does the future of St. Bernadette's look like? I think you've mentioned already that current students and their families, this might not affect them. But what does this actually mean then? Where, if these plans are followed through as planned, what does this mean for the future of St. Bernadette's? Does it have to redesignate to stay relevant or what?
Well, possibly, Greg, and that's going to be, you know, because our teachers and SNAs, we all signed up to be in a specific school. You know, and that's where our expertise are, and that's where our, you know, where we are, our experience and expertise. So maybe in 2 years' time, Greg, if a child, say like Gillian's daughter, wants to get into St. Bernadette's, up until this point, the NEP psychologist or the educational psychologist has to write a line at the end of the report saying that we recommend a place in a special school, i.e. St. Bernadette's. And what we're feared of now, and what is going to come down the line, is that the Department of Education, the NCSE, are going to tell the psychologists, no, don't put that line in.
No more referrals.
No more referrals. Those children will be sent to mainstream. They're going to make provision in mainstream for them. Mainstream hasn't worked for these
children. Next thing, you're struggling for numbers?
Next thing, we're struggling for numbers.
Okay, I'll see what's
happening. And we have to take the complex needs children, which we don't know what it is. That's not our expertise. And it's just, it's the uncertainty that is unhelpful at the minute, Greg.
And Gillian, like so many of these situations, you know, this isn't necessarily about Maddie. You're really speaking out to ensure, well, firstly, that other young ones and their families don't have to go through that, you know, mainstream experience, that you can speak out. So you're advocating for Maddie, but it's more for those that are coming behind Maddie, I think, to some extent, that, you know, you can speak with honesty and experience as to the difference St. Bernadette's made to your child. So why should another child, the same as Maddie, not have that opportunity to be the best version of themselves?
Exactly. And what St. Bernadette's do fantastically. Like, we went round to view a lot of schools before we decided to send Maddie to St. Bernadette's. And when we went in, every child in that school was working. They weren't playing or, you know, they were all sitting, they were all working, and they were all working together at the same thing. And John took us round and he introduced us to every student, and he knew every student by name. He knew what they liked and their skills, and every student that was there told us that they were happy. They told us they wanted to be there. And as I say, I was told Maddie would never read and write and that she wouldn't be educational, and she's doing amazing.
It's testament to John and the school. It's brilliant and terrible at the same time.
Exactly.
That she defied that, John.
Just, Greg, you know, special education, you know, it can be very topical, it can be very emotive, it's very, very important, And when you have something in special education that is working so well,
we're not fighting to get it.
Why would you want to take that away? Why would you want to change that when it's so good?
Mm-hmm. Well, people often ask, well, what can I do? It's up to you. I'm not telling you what to do, but you can contact your local elected representatives. Get onto the government ones, the non government ones. You can write directly or email Taoiseach Micheál Martin, Taoiseach Simon Harris. You know, that's what you can do. You're not being asked to go out into the streets or anything at this point. You're being asked to let your local representative know, or indeed the Taoiseach or Taoiseach, that you disagree with this. Of course, you can get onto the Department of Education, etc., etc. So there's lots you can do, even though you might feel helpless in this situation. Gillian McCrabb, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Maddie, very lucky to have an advocate in you speaking so well on her behalf. And John Harron, the same, on behalf of all students and staff as well, doing amazing things at St Bernadette's Special School Letterkenny. Ironically, all you're asking for is to be able to keep doing it.
Exactly.
That's it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Seems like a simple request. Mm-hmm. All right, and we also have to be careful that once this crosses the line, it can be like behind the scenes that St Bernadette's and other special schools then sort of start being chipped away at. So we'll keep across that.